Any history of Czechoslovakia's dissident movement in the 1970s will include more than a passing reference to the writer, editor, and translator Paul Wilson. Originally from Canada, he came to the country in 1967, then in his 20s, and he was to stay for 10 years, eventually expelled in 1977 for associating with dissidents and the underground music scene. Paul Wilson was back in Prague last month for the launch of a collection of his essays about the country over the last 3 decades. He spoke to David Vaughan.
During the decade he spent in Czechoslovakia, Paul Wilson was far more than just an observer. After witnessing the Prague Spring and the Soviet invasion of 1968, he became increasingly involved in the dissident movement during the political, social, and cultural clampdown of the 70s. His friends included not just writers and thinkers, among them Václav Havel, but also musicians, and he ended up playing with the legendary underground rock band The Plastic People of the Universe. After his expulsion and return to Canada, Paul continued to promote the work of dissident writers and musicians, helping to draw attention in the West to their plight. And he writes frequently about the Czech Republic to this day. A Czech edition of Paul's essays has just been published and was launched with the surviving members of the Plastic People in attendance at the Václav Havel Library here in Prague. And that was where I met him.
It's rather nice that your book's being launched here at the Václav Havel Library. Do you have a particular memory of Václav Havel?
I do have a very vivid memory of the last time I talked to him, which was last March, that is March 2011, when I was on my way to Egypt to find out just how much like 1989 or how much unlike 1989 the revolution was. And I took along some of my translations, especially The Power of the Powerless and other essays. And I asked him if I could have his permission to find a translator into Arabic, because I thought maybe the Arabs might be able to use an essay like The Power of the Powerless. And he said, yes, please, go ahead. But then he said, but listen, Paul, he said, do you think the Arabs are ready for democracy? And I said, Vašku, do you think the Czechs are ready for democracy in 89? Nobody's really ready for it, you know, especially when things happen so quickly. So that was the last time I actually talked to him directly. And then I was at his funeral, of course, which was a sad thing, but also quite inspiring because of the upwelling of feeling that people expressed.
And I have to follow up that question with the obvious question. You say you went to Egypt to see if there were parallels with what you remembered of the Velvet Revolution here. How many did you find?
Well, I found a few. I don't know how profound or superficial they were, but the idea that suddenly fear disappears overnight, that definitely happened. And the incredible sense of empowerment that people felt because they had brought this dictator down was even stronger, in fact, because they actually did have a direct influence on the fall of Mubarak. But there were all so many differences that I think the parallels that people were drawing, these sort of facile parallels, did not apply. And I think now they're going through a pretty difficult stage. We'll see how it turns out. But my fingers are crossed for them.
As long as it doesn't end up like 68.
There's no one to invade them. They can only screw it up themselves.
And we're here in the Václav Havel Library for the launch of your book, which has the very corny title of Bohemian Rhapsodies. Why is it called Bohemian Rhapsodies?
Well, we were looking around for a title that kind of expressed the spirit of what was in the book and couldn't find any. And I thought that it would be interesting to have a title that would be recognizable even to people who didn't understand English. You call it corny, I call it ironic. There are no rhapsodies in the book. Some of the pieces I think are quite critical of some of the politics that go on here.
Yeah, when I said corny, maybe I should stress that I meant there's clearly an element of tongue-in-cheek.
Oh, there's definitely an element of tongue-in-cheek, and there's an even bigger one, because Ivan Yeros, who is the fabled, now passed away, artistic director of the Plastic People of the Universe and the godfather of the underground, I don't know how else I could describe him. Ivan Yeros hated Queen, and Ivan had very, very strict musical taste, and he actually, according to some young people that I talked to, people who were young then, he forbade them to listen to Queen.
And so you're being very mean, because of course he can't answer back now, now that you've called this book Bohemian Rhapsodies. now that he's no longer with us?
Now that he's no longer with us, he can't answer back, but I am prepared to defend it before him, before whichever throne we stand.
And tell me, what did you decide to put in this collection of essays that you have written over the years about Czechoslovakia, about the Czech Republic? I mean, Czechs are notorious for being very, very sceptical about foreigners who write about them, and you, of course, you're exposing yourself to being torn apart.
Well, exactly, and I'm actually looking forward to it, because I gave Viktor Stoyalov, the publisher at Torst, a collection of essays, most of which were about Czechoslovakia, but some of which were about other subjects as well, music and philosophy and Marshall McLuhan, all kinds of different subjects. But Martin Machovec, the editor, chose only Czech subjects. And he kept reassuring me that people would find it interesting and so on. But, I mean, if I'm exposed to public tearing down, I don't mind. The pieces were written over the past 30 years, and I feel a certain sense of distance from them. And I won't take it personally if people hate them.
And so can you give us some examples of pieces that are in the collection, for example, from that period 30 years ago when there was no light at the end of the tunnel as far as communist Czechoslovakia was concerned?
Well, the piece that leads off is a piece called Growing Up with Orwell, and it's really a piece about reading Orwell at various stages of my life, but the most important stage, of course, was when I came to Czechoslovakia, so it's kind of autobiographical, describing how I arrived here and the Orwellian things that I saw around me or didn't see around me.
And you arrived as a very young man in 1967, wasn't it?
I was in my mid-20s in 1967, and I had just abandoned a master's thesis on George Orwell and decided to kind of strike out and see Orwellian territory for myself.
In the fall of 1967, the signals were very mixed. There were student demonstrations followed by crackdowns. People told me that there was more freedom of expression than before, but then suddenly a popular magazine would be banned. Wherever I went, though, people seemed happy, or at least expectant. They told me horror stories, but the stories all seemed to refer to the past. Hope had begun to cast its glow everywhere. It was as though the natural optimistic exuberance of the young people I taught in Brno and Prague had infected the whole of society. Whatever was going on, it did not feel like 1984. Oddly enough, though, the visible features of 1984 were almost all there. The elevators that didn't work, the drab clothing, the dismal public art, the chronic shortages of basic goods like toilet paper and potatoes, the rot-gut local rum, the cold, filthy trains and crowded trams, the dimly lit streets, the vile cigarettes that spilled their tobacco whenever they were tipped vertically, the banners and the signs flaunting boilerplate slogans that celebrated the gains of socialism. In the prevailing optimism, however, such things seemed like temporary inconveniences to be borne with sporting good humor until things got better. I didn't understand that they were not symptoms of a disease, but the disease itself, nor did I appreciate the grinding humiliations of everyday life, which were largely invisible to me.
There's another piece which I wrote in the early 80s about the plastic people. That was partly because they were still in terrible trouble with the police, and I wanted to give them some kind of profile abroad. And that was published in a big magazine called Musician. And then there are book reviews, and there are essays on translation, and a series of essays I wrote for the New York Review of Books on the elections of 92 and the breakup of the country. And there's a lot about Havel, because people ask me to write about him, and so I have tried to be fair, but with a certain distance, and some of the essays about him are fairly critical, I would say.
It's just a few months after his death, of course, there's a danger of hagiography, isn't there?
Well, there is, and I don't think there's any hagiography in my pieces. When I look back at them, especially when I read them in Czech, I think the only fault may be that they're too kind. Not that I don't admire the man, but, you know, I have a certain distance from him, even though I have a very intimate knowledge of his work as his translator. So,
there's evidently a great deal you do agree with in Havel. So what are some particular points that niggle with you?
What niggles with me is his rejection of political parties, something he may have inherited from Masaryk, and he also may have inherited, as the Czechs say, an allergy against political parties, against big political parties, because of the Communist Party.
Do you think that the alternative is sort of intrigue and a lack of clarity on the political scene? That's what you think is the danger?
I think that distancing himself from being involved in party politics himself weakened him in his negotiations with Parliament when he tried to get, quite rightly, certain laws passed or certain changes made to the Constitution. He had no negotiating power because he had no party behind him. It left him quite helpless sometimes vis-à-vis Václav Klaus.
You've mentioned differences with President Havel. What would be, in his ideas, maybe the idea that comes closest to your own view of the world?
I think it's this incredible capacity that Havel had within him to forgive people who ask for forgiveness. In other words, you know, he did not hold it against communists who were sincerely willing to drop their communism and take part in the creation of a new democratic state. He was completely willing to forgive. That willingness not to carry old conflicts into the future is an amazing quality. But I think even deeper than that is his quality of decency. He treated people decently. He treated the secret policemen who were tailing him, he treated them decently.
Going out and offering them cups of tea and things like that when they were watching his country cottage, that sort of thing.
That's right, and helping them out of the ditch when they got stuck in the snow and letting them know where he was going in advance. He was kind to them in a very strange way. He couldn't hold grudges, and I think that sense of his presence really had an impact, especially on his immediate circle, but even on people beyond that.
And finally, Josef Škvoretský, who was the most famous Czech in Canada, where you are from, died recently. A few years ago, Professor Gordon Skilling died, who was the foremost North American historian of 20th century Czechoslovakia. Do you feel a growing sense of responsibility on your own shoulders to inform your compatriots about this country, about the Czech Republic and Czechoslovakia, and it's been in the 20th and now the 21st century?
I don't necessarily feel a growing sense of responsibility, because this book, this collection of essays, is an example of what I've been doing over the years, and just in those very terms, informing Canadians and Americans and the Brits about what was going on here. But the fact is that that both Škvoretský and Skilling leave a huge hole behind them. Although both of them, and Havel as well, and even Ivan Jiroš, who also passed away recently, have left behind them what I would call a completed work. They did not die not having fulfilled their destiny as writers or as politicians or whatever they wanted to be. And so the only obligation that I feel, especially in terms of Škvoretský, is there might be some of his books that may need translating, and certainly I think I would like to work on raising Ivan Jiroš's profile, because he was very important in this country, more important than a lot of people know.
Very hard to translate into English, mind you.
It is, but I mean, his story about the plastic people is pretty straightforward, and I started translating in the 1970s by translating his essays.
Paul Wilson, thank you very much indeed for talking to us, and best of luck with the Czech collection of your essays, Bohemian Rhapsodies.
Thanks, David.